In the past 3 weeks, two short-lived blockades have gone up in support of the Grassy Narrows First Nations struggle for their land. We'll hear from Grassy Narrows community members and blockaders about the history of the issue and what happened at the blockades. On December 2, 2002, the youth of the Grassy Narrows First Nation started a blockade of a logging road in their territory. The blockade remains today and is the longest-standing Indigenous logging blockade in Canadian history. The blockade came after decades of oppression from the forced relocation of the community in the 1960s to mercury poisoning in the 1970s due to contamination from a paper mill. Industrial clear-cut logging is one of the latest exploitations experienced by Grassy Narrows. Approximately 50% of Grassy Narrows land has been logged by multinational corporations like Abitibi Consolidated and Weyerhaeuser. Despite the blockade, Abitibi and Weyerhaeuser continue to log in sections of Grassy Narrows territory. Lorna is a community member in Grassy Narrows. Her partner has a trap line, of which 75% has been logged.
Then there was the flooding that occurred when they built the dams to make hydroelectric power, and that flooded the ricing fields that used to be a big source of food for the community, but also income because they could sell the rice. Then in and around that time and sometime later, they also opened up ricing to non-Aboriginals. At one point in time, ricing used to be only an activity that Aboriginal people could do. So they lost that source of income. Then there was the mercury, which I believe was discovered around 1970-71 in there, and then that shut down the commercial fisheries that used to be run out of this community and also took away a food source for the people of the community in addition to taking away their employment.
J.B. Phobister is a community member in Grassy Narrows. He traveled to Winnipeg on June 1st, 2006, to speak to interested people in Winnipeg about the struggle in Grassy Narrows.
What's happening on our territory is really having an impact on our way of life, and the logging companies and the government have absolutely no respect for us, our people, and that makes me really angry, because you know I guess what I've learned in the last 4 years is we are different. We're not Canadians. I guess I've learned firsthand that I cannot consider myself a Canadian, you know, for what the Canadian government does to me and the provincial government. It's very clear to me that Aboriginal people, Anishinaabe people, Native people have to take a stand against the injustice that is being imposed on us. At first, we were involved with the process that was set up by the Ministry of Natural Resources and logging companies. We voiced our concerns, and nothing was really being. We didn't see anything effective, that would help us, the people in Grassy. We have a lot of unemployment, I guess, like that in a lot of First Nations communities. Our unemployment rate is probably between 75% to 90%. Most times about 75%. Our people live on welfare checks totaling $201 a month. That amounts to about $6.70 a day that my people are expected to live on. After failing with trying to get trying to be heard with through the government and the logging company. We decided we were going to blockade. So on, I believe it was December the 3rd of 2002, we went ahead with the blockade. And we had probably about 60 people show up, and about 40 of those were children. It was very frightening at the beginning. We were told that the police were coming. I was really excited. At the same time, I was really nervous. So the two constables arrived at the first to arrive, and we were told that the sergeant was going to come in and assess the situation. He arrived and he said that under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, we had the right to protest. So that really, you know, I guess it gave us, we were excited, you know, the police aren't going to do anything. We stopped two trucks within the first hour, and we had a big argument with the logging. I guess he's the logging manager. We told him, you know, the road is closed. We're not allowed. We're not logging on our territory anymore. And they argued, and eventually they just left. That was the first day. We had many blockades. After, we had roving blockades. We had blockades at different locations and at different times. It was effective. When the land is destroyed, when it's been clear cut, it's like having something removed from us. I'm quite angry because, you know, of what's been happening to Anishinaabe people. And, you know, I wish every First Nations, every Native community would take a stand, because it's not just Grassy that's being hurt. Every First Nation in Canada is being marginalized, or, you know. When people came to the blockade several times, other Native people came and they asked, what can I do to help? My answer to them was, when you have problems, why don't you do something on your reserve? That would be your help for us.
Matt Schaff is a member of the Christian Peacemaker teams. He lived in Grassy Narrows for a number of months, doing work such as human rights observation and anti-racism work in Kenora.
First of all, it's important to understand that their traditional territory is about 2,500 square miles on the north and south sides of the English River. They, before roads came in the 60s, they traveled using the river. So they went through that entire territory, trapping in the wintertime, fishing in spring and summer, picking blueberries, wild ricing. So they cover this entire circuit, this 2,500 square miles, supported a certain number of families. So some of that is accessible by road from the reserve, the part on the south side of the English River, and that's where most of the blockading happened. So in a area around the community, you don't see clear cutting happening at the moment. North of the river is another story. To get there, you have to go up to Vermilion Bay and then north on the highway to Red Lake. So it's quite a, to mount blockades in those areas is logistically difficult.
You're listening to The Beat on CKUW 95.9 FM. We're taking a look at recent blockades that went up in the Grassy Narrows First Nation. You've been listening to Grassy Narrows First Nation community members and supporters speak about their situation. After decades of oppression, including residential schools, mercury contamination, and clear-cut logging, youth in Grassy Narrows took a stand and began the longest-standing blockade in Canadian history. More recently, community members invited the Rainforest Action Network and Forest Ethics to support their struggle. About a dozen Rainforest Action Network and Forest Ethics staff and interns stayed in Grassy Narrows during the months of July and August to do support work.
I am one of the interns who has been living at the Slant Lake blockade site for the past 2 months. And while we lived there, we worked on various projects with the community, Grassy Narrows, helping do some repairs on the blockade site and preparing for their youth and elders gathering in powwow and helping out while that was going on. And then we prepared for our own gathering, which was the Earth Justice Gathering, which included a blockade of the Trans-Canada Highway. And then we did some more work on the blockade site, and then we did another blockade of a logging road for 2 days.
The blockade of the Trans-Canada Highway took place on Thursday, July 13th. It began at 9 o'clock a.m. and lasted until dark. The road was blocked by a tripod, a structure made of three poles, like a camera tripod, but 10 meters tall. At the top of a tripod, a person hangs in a harness. Another person locked themselves to the axle of a logging truck, preventing it from moving. A third person had their arm locked in the middle of a cement-filled oil drum. About 100 supporters were present at the blockade.
There were several groups that came together to work on that action. There was the Rainforest Action Network, there was people, the blockaders from Grassy Narrows, and there were people from the Six Nations and the blockade down in Caledonia. And we all came together to block the highway just to bring attention to the logging that's happening on Grassy Narrows traditional territory, and just to sort of express the power that we do have to stop business as usual from happening, even if it's just for 1 day. They let all the activists at the blockade just walk out peacefully around dusk the day of the blockade, and then we all traveled back to the Slant Lake blockade site up near the reserve. And as people started to leave, the police arrested them when they were separated from the group. So every time someone left, they were stopped by police and arrested.
The police arrested around a dozen people the day following the blockade. Aboriginal people and people of color were targeted. Those arrested were charged with mischief. The second blockade took place on Grassy Narrows' traditional territory. English River Road, a logging road, was blockaded for a day and a half. The blockade began in the afternoon of Wednesday, July 26th, and was raided at approximately 9 o'clock p.m. on Thursday night. 9 people were arrested, 8 of whom were women. One woman was arrested in front of her 5-year-old daughter and 4-month-old daughter. Most of us relate to either
causing or cleaning the shit. Community members had been discussing blocking that road for several months now, and we decided shortly after the Trans-Canada blockade that it would be a good time to block logging on that road, and we ended up blocking logging on Grassy Narrows' traditional land use area for almost 2 days. We didn't use any of our previous tactics and basically just sat on a bridge and decided that no logging trucks were going to get through. We allowed passenger vehicles through, but no logging trucks. We'd been in negotiations with police from the beginning, and on the second evening, again close to dusk, the police, without warning, drove in over 15 vehicles, from what I counted, and over 30 police officers rushed the blockade area where there were women with small children and babies there. And basically, unless they were physically holding onto their children, all of the blockaders there were arrested. and we were taken to Kenora Jail and charged with mischief. Since the blockade began at Slant Lake in 2002, there have been no arrests made in that blockade, and Grassy Narrows community members have held several roving blockades since, and again, no arrests have been made. The arrests that were made on English River Road last week were... that marked the first arrest of a Grassy Narrows community member in the history of the blockade.
The manner in which the police arrested her was really just horrible. I mean, they came in, a huge force of them, and just started pushing people to the ground and telling everyone to get down. There were 9 people arrested, and 8 of them were women. Mostly, aside from Chrissy, they were, you know, young women. And she herself actually is quite young, but this was done right in front of her children. And her daughter was crying, and it was very disturbing for the children who were there to see their mother arrested, and she was handcuffed, and she wasn't let out of her handcuffs even while she was in the paddy wagon, even though other people in the wagon had their cuffs taken off. And while she was in jail, she was in pain because she had a fever and her shoulders were hurting from being in the handcuffs the whole time. And the way that we had to leave her the next day was really sad because we knew that she really needed our support, but we were being forced out of the community because we were told by the police that we had to leave Kenora within 24 hours. Even though Grassy Narrows, in their mind, is part of the district of Kenora, which to us doesn't really make a lot of sense. And the people in the community supported us staying, even the chief and members of the band council, but we still had to leave because of threats by the police. And by them doing this, it's to the members of the community, they feel that it's taking away all of their support, that they're just trying to scare people away.
I think it's a matter of whose jurisdiction is the Separation Lake Bridge. What authority does the OPP have to arrest a Native woman on her traditional land and take her away and charge her?
The place where we were blockading was significant because the bridge over the English River Channel is leading into the Grassy Narrows traditional territory. Lots of the community members have trap lines over there. And I believe it was 1982 when they built that bridge. Community members had protested it because they knew that they were just building it to begin logging it. Before that, the community members only accessed it by boat. And as soon as they built that bridge, it allowed logging corporations in there to destroy the land. And so we were blocking them from doing that for the day, for the 2 days.
Something else?
One thing I've learned this summer is that the people of Grassy Narrows, they have children and lives, and they're very busy people. And, you know, even if they believe that this issue is of the utmost importance, they don't have all the time in the world to dedicate to it, so it's really crucial that people from the outside help them out, and they need as much support as they can get.
You've been listening to The Beat on CKUW 95.9 FM. We've heard from Grassy Narrows community members and supporters about the history of Grassy Narrows, their struggle to reclaim their land, the blockade they began in 2002, and two more recent blockades. For more information about Grassy Narrows or how to support them, visit www.freegrassy.org or www.friendsofgrassynarrows.com. The background music you're listening to is by Equal, off her CD Apprentice to the Mystery, with the track Reluctant Warrior. I'm Sheila Pizialin for The Beat. Cleaning the shit, and I still get hit like bad medicine. For defending them, gotta be careful with my genius gift.